This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Welcome to the Jeff Rubin Show, coming to you today from High and Mighty Studios. This is very exciting.
This is more exciting for me,
this is,
Jeff.
This is, so I'm in LA, at the apartment of John Gabris, host of High and Mighty, and John has been on this podcast, but not in a long time, actually,
it's
because
been a
he
while.
Moved to LA.
Yeah.
And, but also you were on all the old web stuff I did basically all the time. And here's what's going on here is this is actually part two. What? I know, right? So John and I are doing a doubleheader on his podcast, High and Mighty. Last week, we discussed Blade One on this podcast, the Jeff Rubin Show. This week, we are going to be discussing Blade Two.
How convenient.
So, and
we will leave out how difficult it was for us to do the math of when our podcasts come out and who should do Blade One and who should do Blade Two.
So, if you know, you can listen to this one first. Hopefully, you've seen both Blade movies. I feel like people that listen to either of our podcasts, pretty high percentage of them have seen both Blade 1 and 2.
I think it's pretty safe to say that.
But maybe you want to take a pause, go back and check out John's podcast, High and Mighty, and listen to us talk about Blade 1, and also listen to the rest of the great episodes. John's podcast, John said some nice things about me on his podcast, so I want to return the favor.
And this is the only reason I did, so I can get compliments.
But John's show is actually, as John pointed out, a lot like, he's like mine, in that John just finds, I'm calling you John all of a sudden.
It's very weird.
Gabris over here finds things that are interesting to him and finds interesting people who know a lot about it and just completely unprepared interviews them.
Right.
You know what?
Yeah, that's the main difference between the two of us.
I do prepare, but I'm not prepared for this. You know what the other show that actually reminds me of my show is since we're talking about it, is Alec Baldwin's show.
Yes.
Baldwin just like seems like his podcast, it seems like he just like finds people he's met over the years who are like
who are
into things that interest him.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what's up? And like, he's like not an expert on it. And anyway.
I love Alec Baldwin's podcast.
I like Alec Baldwin's show
really
too.
Good. Yeah. And do you listen to Don't Get Me Started, Will Hines and Anthony King's podcast?
No, because I'm not an improv nerd.
Yeah. They don't do anything about improv.
Oh, I thought it was an improv thing.
No.
I would listen to that.
That's all it is literally like the only thing they don't talk about is comedy.
Oh, I thought it was the complete opposite. I thought all they talked about was improv.
Oh, no. They have someone on to talk about one specific topic.
I would totally listen to that because
it's literally like it's called Don't Get Me Started. It's like there's something if someone started you on it at a party, you could potentially ruin.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I think those guys are funny. I've been listening to Will's
Beatles.
Screw It, Let's Talk About the Beatles podcast and loving it. First of all, Screw It, Let's Talk About the Beatles is an amazing
name
for
yeah.
a podcast.
Yeah.
I was immediately sold, and that's a really fun show.
Yeah.
Enough plugging other people's shows. Let's talk about Blade 2.
A 20-year-old movie.
So, just to, in case you didn't listen to John's show, quick setup is I fucking love the Blade movies so much.
Me
They're like two of
too.
My favorite movies. We just spent a whole episode of John's show talking about how Blade 1 is pretty much the first modern superhero movie, how it predates The Matrix by a year and kind of set up a lot of stuff that you see in The Matrix. And now we're talking about Blade 2. So something else that I talked about, I don't know how much I should repeat what we said. Let's not much.
Whatever, a little bit. If
but you're... one thing is I recently saw I went to a double header. What do you call it? Dual screening.
A double header. Double feature.
Double feature of Blade 1 and 2.
I can't believe we went with sports first, the two of us.
And in the middle, one of my friends, so there's a break between Blade 1 and 2. Most people don't want to sit in the movies and watch two. Like, it was just a normal price ticket. So, like, a lot of people were, like, satisfied to leave after Blade 1.
Like, New Beverly, often people
right.
come for the second one or leave after the first one.
Right. Yeah. So, one of my friends was like, that was pretty good. Is Blade 2 better than Blade 1? And I was like, motherfucker, you've got no idea. As good as Blade 1 is, Blade 2 is like 10 times better.
I was just going to say, and like we talked about Blade 1 for an hour and we both loved it so much, but I like Blade 2 even more.
It is...
because it's Guillermo del Toro.
It's Guillermo del Toro. So is this Guillermo del Toro's first... No, he did Mimic. I think this is his second like major Hollywood movie.
Oh, wow. This predates Hellboy.
I think so. I'm
that
not
makes
sure.
Sense. I don't remember. I never.
That's a good question. Even Hellboy 1. Hellboy 1's pretty good. I like Hellboy 1, but Hellboy 2 is like one of my favorite superhero movies.
Yeah,
maybe even one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
I love. But and so Guillermo del Toro is one of my favorite directors, and he made two of my favorite superhero movies before you even get to stuff like Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
One of the few movies I've dedicated an entire episode of the show to before this. It actually occurs to me. I think I've only done it twice, and I think it was. Pacific Rim and Blade 2.
So you've only done Guillermo del Toro.
I've only done Guillermo del Toro movies. I mean, you know what's funny is I went and saw that gothic horror one he did.
Oh,
what was that called?
Oh, shit. It's not going to come to me right away. It was like not, it's not Blood. I did the
something
Universal Studios ride of it. What would you say something what?
No, something Manor of the Place, whatever that was called.
Yeah.
I saw it because I love, I'll see anything he makes. And like, 20 minutes in, there was like a ballroom dance, like a grand scene where they're all dancing in the ballroom, and I was like, I don't know if this one's gonna jive. That movie, so that movie is, I don't think it's a bad movie, but it's like very like gothic romance,
right,
and like
right,
not
right.
for me,
not
but
exactly what you're.
But you can see it, like it's, but it's very much for Guillermo del Toro, and I want him to do whatever makes him happy.
Yeah.
Blade 2 is like, so what makes a Guillermo del Toro movie a Guillermo? What do I like about him? Cool monsters. I love cool monsters in movies, you know?
And
like,
the bad guys, the Reavers? What are they
Reapers?
Called? Reapers.
But just generally, Guillermo, like, what are the qualities of Guillermo del Toro movies
okay.
that we look for?
Monsters?
Like, cool original monster designs that are unlike anything you've seen. Pan's Labyrinth.
A group of, like, misanthropic good guys?
Yeah. Also, like, clockwork mechanic
steampunky
type. But not steampunky like in an obnoxious way, but like you'll see some gears turning something, you know.
Yeah, it's sort of like the old, like old and new side by side.
Yeah Did you ever see I think it's his first movie, and it's Spanish language, but Ron Perlman's in it. I think it's a Mexican movie, and it's called, oh boy, what is it called? That I feel like I should look up.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
It's a pretty cool little small movie, and it's like a, it's sort of vampire-y, and it's about a little device that, like, it pricks you, and then I think you become immortal or something, but it, like, starts turning you into a vampire, and there's, like, sort of, Ron Perlman's, like, a bad guy who wants it, and I think a grandfather uses it and starts going bad or whatever, but the device itself, the movie's, like, pretty good, but the device itself's, like, this, like, cool little clockwork thing, and there's all these, like, cool close-up shots of it,
oh,
you know?
That's awesome.
Ron Perlman, of course, was in Hellboy, too.
I was
He's like,
just about to say, Ron Perlman's a good marker of a Guillermo movie as
Yeah. So, let's talk about Ron. So, the new cast, we kind of covered, like, Kris Kristofferson and Wesley Snipes in the last one. Who is new in this movie?
Let's talk about Kris Kristofferson in this moment, though.
Okay.
Dies in the first movie.
He dies
kills himself, allegedly.
Pretty unambiguously shoots himself,
yeah,
you know?
Like, yeah,
like, you don't actually see it, but it seems pretty clear.
It makes no sense for him not to at that point.
Yeah.
And then this movie retcons that he has been a prisoner of the vampires for years, for 2 years.
I think that just goes to show like how good Kris Kristofferson is in the first one. They were like, I don't care if it doesn't make sense. We got to get
him back. We're making another one, we got to get Whistler back. Because you could even see that they tried to replace, adding new people, Scud, Norman Reedus.
I did not realize until I saw this movie a month ago that Scud was Norman Reedus. I've seen this movie 1,000 times.
Not like, as many times as I've seen Boondock Saints.
So. I've never seen Boondock Saints.
What?
One of the pitches when we were talking about doing a thing that spans 2 episodes was I make you watch my favorite movie that you've never seen and vice versa. You could have made me watch Boondock Saints.
Oh, that would have been good. We'll save that.
It just missed me. Like, I just never saw that.
Oh, yeah. The second I got to college, someone's like, have you seen this movie? Yeah.
But the Norman Reedus, I went back and I read, sometimes when I watch an older movie, I like go back and read the Ebert review, because it's kind of fun to see, like, I don't know, it's fun to see, like, it doesn't have to be the Ebert one, though those like are often at the top of the search results,
right.
And it's kind of fun to see, like, did they get it, like, did they get it right, you know,
right,
like,
right.
And Ebert really likes, Ebert gave both of these movies really strong reviews, and in this one in particular, he actually calls out, like, he's like, strong supporting performances from Kris Kristofferson and Norman Reedus. And
Norman,
like,
Reedus is great in this.
He is really good. I never, what else is he in? Like, I don't know anything he's in between this. I'm not a big Walking Dead guy, so
yeah,
I don't
me either.
So what is he in between this and Walking Dead?
Maybe Boondock Saints and a couple of other movies, like, but I don't really remember him from much.
So he's like the new Whistler, but the Wesley Snipes Whistler relationship's like a really good one. They actually
And that's a tropic kind of relationship. I don't even know if tropic's a word, but it's a trope relationship of like the gadget guy who's at home and supports like the Oracle or the dude in the
right,
in the,
he's like cute, but he's like an old kind of, I guess he's not an alcoholic, but he's pretty grizzled.
He's got like a knee brace, like the big thing, which is
He's like an old grizzled man to like Wesley Snipes, sort of. Like, neither of them's fun, so it's not like quite like oil and water. But
yeah,
like,
right. They're both just sort of miserable.
But it's a fun like father son. It's a fun father son relationship, and it's like a relief that they brought him back. Even though it makes no sense. You could not do that in a movie today. Like, if Captain America like ignored a piece of continuity from like a previous Captain America movie,
it'd be fucked.
It'd be like chaos. Like, they'd have to shut down the operation.
Right. Yeah. Kevin Feige or whatever
he's,
would be
he's
like
fired.
They'd be burning effigies of him in the street.
They like you can't do that anymore. I remember Pat when Pat Castles, frequent friend of the show, Pat Castles, when the Hobbit movie came out, was like, thought it was like, it'd be so funny if it just ended with like Bilbo dying, you know, just like completely what's his name? Peter Jackson just like was like, fuck you fans. And
yeah,
just
that'd
like
be awesome.
Had a completely non-canon ending to The Hobbit that does not set up Lord of the Rings at all.
Oh, that would be so funny. That retroactively undercut his entire
just
film.
Just like, yeah, just like Bilbo gets like a gun or something, you know? And, Norman Reedus is new. Also, Ron Perlman. Let's talk about Ron Perlman for a sec. Here, I want to talk about Pacific Rim for a minute, actually, if I might.
Please, I was hoping we would.
I remember in Pacific Rim when Ron Perlman shows up. I don't think this might be the first time I learned who Ron Perlman was when I saw Blade 2. Like, I don't know if he was aware who he was before that. He is, of course, the giant, intimidating, bald man who's been much more successful since. Sons of Anarchy was a really huge show that he was great in. He's a star of Hellboy. And he's in all these game roles. I remember when I saw Pacific Rim, like, he's like Hannibal, I think is his character, and he's like a big entrance. And I remember like the audience like kind of clapped when he showed up, you know?
He's the one that Charlie Day goes to see, and he like collects monster parts or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He has like kaiju hearts and shit.
Yeah, just like halfway through the movie, you're like, hey, wait a minute, where's Ron Perlman? And then he shows up like alligator boots and big sunglasses. And it's, I remember the audience clapping, and I remember it just being like, I thought it was a really great use of an actor, and of course the great actor Ron Perlman, who Guillermo del Toro plays like an instrument almost, you know, he knows exactly how to use him, that he just places him in the scene, and it's like everyone loves the character, like you get like he's playing like kind of a Ron Perlman character, and like it's like he's introduced in the middle of the movie, and it made like I feel like everyone just like kind of got it and like knew who he was supposed to be because he's playing like the kind of the Ron Perlman
movie,
like all the cocky guy, intimidating guy he's played in like all the other movies.
Yeah.
And it saves a lot of trouble. That starts in Blade 2.
He is exactly that in Blade 2.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the momentum of people knowing who of audience knowing who he is.
Right.
But he does get the great reveal when they're running him through the crew, and the names are like Lighthammer, blah, 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 this person, Venom, Ghostbite, and then it's like, and Reinhardt or Reinhardt.
I think he's Reinhardt. Reinhardt.
And Reinhardt. And then he like turns slowly around with a big grin and sunglasses on. And he gets like his big Ron Perlman reveal. It just doesn't carry as much weight.
Just don't know. I mean,
but it's such a fucking cool. And that's. Sorry, keep going about Ron Perlman.
I was just going to say, I just remembered he was Beast in the Beauty and the Beast show that Linda Hamilton was on. So he was like around. Like he was like a working actor, but I don't think he was like, you'd put him on a movie poster just yet.
Right. Donnie Yen is one of the fucking...
Donnie Yen is someone, even a month ago when I saw this movie, I didn't know until I saw it again recently, and I realized Donnie Yen was
he's got eyeliner on, so it's a little confusing.
But Donnie Yen is in one of the in the blood pack. He's one of the guys. Oh, I just remembered someone we forgot. Jared, who's kind of the Reaper, who is the bad guy both Blade and the vampires are chasing, is Luke Goss, who would later go on to be also the bad guy in Hellboy 2. He's like the elf king in Hellboy 2. So Guillermo del Toro must have been like, yeah, you put this guy in some monster makeup, he does pretty good.
He is good. He is good in this movie.
It's not a great...
What's like the overall conceit of Blade 2? We didn't even talk about this.
Okay, so it's a very sequel-y thing where we are assuming you have an extreme familiarity with these two movies that came out 20 years ago for both these episodes. Blade 2 is a pretty sequel-y thing where... the Blade, the good guy, the vampire hunter, teams up with the vampires he was hunting in the first movie
because of a newfound,
even badder bad guy who everyone's afraid of.
That's the Fast and the Furious algorithm.
Right, right.
They're going to be like, by Fast 15, it's going to be every bad guy they've ever faced is alt. Like, in the most recent Fast and the Furious, they do so much work to make you forget that Jason Statham killed Han and killed like a bunch of people. They make him such a good guy so that he could be on the team going forward.
I'm sure there's other examples, but the other one that jumps to mind for me is Pirates of the Caribbean, actually. It was like second and third one, it's like the pirates are under threat now, so Barbossa's got to join.
Well, it's like one of those things where it's like he was very good in the movie, but would it be unoriginal for him to fight them again? You know what I mean?
Right, right.
This movie doesn't make as much because it's not the exact same people from the first one, which is cool.
But it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense from like a screen. I totally get why you do it. It's like the stakes are raised. You got some new dynamics. You got him teaming up with the previous bad guys.
Right, and you have the world established that as a sequel, you understand that like Blade doesn't get along with vampires. You know the Daywalker vampire mentality kind of thing.
So what do you think makes this so much better than Blade 1, which we already gushed about for an hour?
Well, I think the reason why, because it does what a sequel is supposed to do, and it just turns the volume up on
everything.
Yeah,
I guess that's right. It turns the volume up without like losing sight of what made the original good. It's also a lot more fun. We were just talking, I honestly don't remember if it was the last episode or this episode already,
but
we were just talking about how Wesley Snipes is very serious in these movies. And
he's a little more fun in Blade 2.
And they surround him with fun people, like Ron Perl, like the Blood Pack's fun, Ron Perlman's fun, Norman Reedus is fun. So like, it's a much more fun movie, and the budget's bigger, so
no bad guys
better.
Are fun in this, though. None of the Reavers are...
Yeah, none of the Reavers are fun, but the Blood Pack are antagonists, and they're fun. And Scud's, we learn later, is an antagonist.
That's a fucking awful twist.
Really? Well, I mean...
It's not awful. I'm sorry. It just it doesn't hold any water at that moment in the movie.
I think the thing that makes it okay, it's not like The Sixth Sense or anything, but the thing that makes it okay is that they've, I think, pretty effectively thrown out Whistler as the red herring for the movie, where like you're not sure if Whistler's the bad guy.
Right, because he like disappears at one point.
Right, so the whole... And Blade... says something to him, or Blade seems to not trust him, and then,
right, because he says like, "How do you get over the taste in one day?"
Yeah,
or the thirst.
So you're thinking like you're just like spending what mental energy you are trying to predict the movie, being like, "Is Whistler a bad guy?" So you're not even thinking about Scud,
right?
Who also I didn't realize the first time I saw the movie smokes weed the entire film,
hand rolled cigarettes or true? Like that's what I was wondering.
I think it's weed.
I think it's weed too.
I mean,
because when Whistler meets him, he's welding, and then he finishes welding by lighting a joint with an arc welder.
I mean, I think like they're pretty clearly joints. I can't.
Me too.
I don't think the X-ray shot or anything, but like that's how I read it. I guess I often will think that when I see someone like smoking in a movie, but I think they usually make it pretty clear. It fits his character too, right?
Yeah, I like that they don't talk about it though.
Yeah,
that
he's never
mentioned. Burning J's.
So that we talked about this a little in the first one, how it's like such an R-rated movie, and how like it's extremely gory. I actually wrote down. Let me find my phone. This Roger Ebert quote, which is great.
Blade 1 has the fucking blood, that blood rave, and then Blade 2 is like, we get it. We know what fucking...
Yeah. Also
there's so many, like... In Blade 2, there's the end fight where Wesley Snipes rises out of, like, a fucking hot tub full of blood. There's, like, a lot of blood stuff, which is always awesome.
I didn't write down the Ebert review like I thought I did, but, you know, go look it up. He calls it, like, he's, like, very impressed by it, but he calls it, like, a... glorious viscera of something.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then he read his review of the third one, which he hated, which is correct, and he talks about how like he's like he actually quotes himself and he's like, I called it this, which kind of sounds like damning it like with faint praise, but it actually is a great movie. the first one has the gore of the fat dude. I think the fat guy who gets melted in the first
Pearl,
one is Pearl is probably the grossest thing, and the blood rave. But
and the blood rave, and then also the blood god summoning is pretty gross with like those wrist slit and stuff like
but
that.
But this one turns it up. I mean, like
the Reavers
are these new vampires who like have this slit in their chin that like opens up almost like alien style to like reveal a
like Predator.
Maybe is that what that is? Like when you have
I think proboscis is a nose, right?
There's a technical term for the thing that comes out of the alien.
It's like
mouth.
Mandibles, right? Like because it is like Predator esque too. It's actually like both because it opens wide like. It opens vertically like, opens horizontally like Predator, but then a little tongue, a barb thing comes out like Alien, which is so cool as fuck.
I kind of got sidetracked when we were talking about it earlier, but that's what I love so much about Guillermo del Toro movies is those monsters. Like, I say this about video games all the time. It's a little less true, but it's still true of movies. Like, why would you, like, if you're making a video game, I'll say, to me, it's so boring to make a video game with, like regular people doing like with guns and regular stuff. Like you could do anything.
Give them
a cool design. Like that's the whole fun part of me is like making up cool stuff. And Guillermo del Toro gets that.
He does it, and he does it cool with the Blood Pact guys.
Yeah,
they're all such interesting.
And they're pretty expendable, except Ron Perlman. But they do all have.
They set him up in like a cool way. Like Lighthammer is like this big tough guy with a fucking silver hammer that he swings. Like
it reminds me of of Aliens actually. Like kind of in Aliens, you get like the cool pack of people who like you learn a little bit about them before they start getting picked off.
The Vasquez's of the world.
The best monster movie this side of Labyrinth for me is Hellboy 2. Like Hellboy 2 is Hellboy 1 is good, but like
Hellboy
it's a little lower.
But
Hellboy 2 is the Blade 2 of Hellboy. You know, it just turns up Hellboy 1, and Hellboy 1's good, but Hellboy 2 has like so many. Like there's a scene where they go to like some weird monster bazaar, and like. I just mentioned Labyrinth, which is one of my favorite movies because, you know, it's just like full of cool Jim Henson puppets. Right, and right. I've never, I honestly think Hellboy 2 and other Guillermo del Toro movies are like the only thing that really approached
right,
that.
Fuck yeah.
And the Reavers are a really cool design. There's that great, really gory, we're talking about the gore now, that scene. It's at the end of this movie's rave scene, The House of Pain.
Oh, I love that. It's a church called The House of Pain.
And they kill that one Reaver and like they can't kill it. And like, they cut it in half and like they yeah. go there's like an autopsy
it's,
of it.
Oh well before the autopsy, which is awesome, their buddy, the long haired blood pack guy, yeah. is turning. Blade slices the top half of his head off,
yeah.
exposing his brain, and he still doesn't die. So then he turns and shoots a couple of holes and the light kills him. But then the top half of the head sits there and the eye is just blinking.
Still blinking, showing yeah. you like how durable they
it's
are.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And the autopsy scene is nasty in a yeah. fun way. It's like so visceral what they're showing
but
you.
But it's also like pink and green, you know? Right. It's like
and it's
not
like,
real.
It's not real, but that's what makes it... But it is like... Cronenberg-esque in that it has like
yeah.
it's organic scary, you know what I mean? It's like because it's practical and because it's biological, there's like that pulsing little mouth thing that they drop blood into, like,
yeah
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
that's disgusting.
That would that day on set, like there's probably just like a team of like awesome artists who like Guillermo so works good. With all the time, who's just like I need more green sludge yeah. coming out
can
of this
be and, slimier please
yeah, like yeah. It's also specific. What do you think about the action in this one compared to the action in the first one?
It's so good. Yeah. I mean, the action in the first one is very good. This, again, just turns it up. The fight scenes are bigger, longer. Great, great, simple fight. Like, I love a movie, and Fast and the Furious kind of does this, where it's like, oh, I'm a fan of big budget action movies. I like when there's a fist fight, like a gritty street fight. I also like when there's ninjas. I also like when there's guns. I like snipers. I like
you have a little something for everyone.
And you have a little something for everyone. And this movie has that opening sequence when they come to deliver the message.
Yeah.
And they come as those two silent ninjas, like flipping through. And I'm like,
that's not even the first action scene. Like there's like there's like a cold open where he's getting information about Whistler. I guess.
Oh right, he rescues Whistler.
Yeah, this opening, that scene.
The cold open is the bad guy revealing the. How the
oh yeah
work.
You're right
yeah.
but there's still another
there's that Russia
there's
sequence.
Still you're right that's the cold open there's another action scene though where he where he finds Whistler because the ninjas don't show
and
up
he kills
he finds
through
Whistler.
He kills all those guys
yeah so I mean we were just saying how Blade 1 has all these great action scenes. We were really able to think of three. We just thought of three in the first like 15 minutes
yeah,
of this
Blade
movie.
2 has like 25 more after this.
The other thing about the Blade 2 action scenes that I've never really gotten about the movie is the movie has like Wesley Snipes a deep respect for martial arts. You got Donnie Yen. That's not a coincidence.
No.
The movie likes martial arts, but this movie, there's a few really specific pro-wrestling moments where Blade,
he suplexes
a dude, the vampire, like, elbow drops him, like,
yes.
they're very, like, clearly pro-wrestling, and I think this wasn't, like, pro-wrestling, like, this was probably, like, Stone, well, it's, like, what year is this, like, 2003?
2003, 2002, something
so,
like that.
So, where was pro-wrestling then? I feel like Stone Cold, we're coming off the down slide.
Yeah, we're coming off the down, like, Stone Cold's, like,
but
on his way.
But it was recent anyway. Like, it was more popular, I think, in 2002 than it is now. More mainstream anyway.
But still, I think that's just a testament to what we're kind of talking about, is, like, if you like these types of movies, you may like wrestling, too, so we'll throw a couple of cool things in like that.
I mean, the suplex is insane, because, like,
it's like a legitimate suplex. Like, he pauses right before he drops him.
And that's towards the end when he's fighting, about to fight Ron Perlman.
And there's no reason for that guy to be completely vertical.
No.
There's no way he would just
that's
be able
funny.
To... Yeah,
yeah he lifts him up so, like... They're two humans tall, basically.
Right, like exactly like a WWE suplex. He has them completely vertical. If you would be fighting or not, you would be bent at the waist at least.
But it's a big moment in the film, or the movie really stops, because before that he's like very kung fu-y. Like you can't like really even track what's going on. He's like shoving electro sticks into people's heads or whatever, and he's like going real fast. And then he like lifts that guy up, and the movie almost stops because it's just like one guy in this one thing.
He pauses,
and you know what's cool is like Ron Perlman's just watching it, and he's like fighting the guys, like but maintaining eye contact with Ron Perlman.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of like kicking guys that he's doing a lot of flipping a guy onto the ground, stomping on his face, but never taking his eyes off Perlman.
And then
which
the suplex
is
right before Ron Perlman, so he drops the guy, and you see it. It's and then like you see Ron Perlman looking at no one in front of him, and Blade comes up from the bottom of the camera. Like you don't see him on the ground. You just see like Blade like whoop. Just,
yeah,
like, it's almost goofy. You know?
Yeah, it's there are moments in this movie, more moments of levity that Blade 1 doesn't have, which I think also improves Blade 2.
Like what?
There's a great moment when he comes out of the blood right before this fight.
Yeah.
And it's like, music starts fucking, it's like, and he like smiles and then flexes and then squeezes, makes fists and all of his knuckles crack. And it's like, that's like such a fucking cartoon homage. Right. You know, it's like, and he has moments where he.
Oh, you know, it's a joke?
He cracks jokes too. He says to Ron Perlman, "Do you blush?" before he kills him. Yeah.
Well, that's more of like an "I'm about to kill you" line. Like the some motherfucker's always trying to say it uphill in the first one.
Oh, that's. How did we not talk about that in the last episode? Some motherfuckers always try to ice skate uphill, which is an insane thing to say before killing a vampire.
But here's a joke, and this isn't like Blade tells a joke, but it's a moment of levity. Is Ron Perlman in the rave scene has his laser gun, the laser sight on Blade. He's like,
yeah.
It would be so easy. And then you see that Blade, without even looking, has spotted this and has a gun on him. Like, that's a.
And then he smiles.
Yeah, like.
He smiles like he's like, gotcha.
That's how Blade tells jokes, you know?
Right, but that's like funny. He doesn't even smile in Blade 1.
Yeah, so there's nothing in that in Blade, in Blade 1. So it is definitely lighter on its feet and more.
So
fun.
The House of Pain fight is really fun. So
here's some trivia. I can't like verify this, but I it's like Wikipedia citation needed. Mm-hmm. But apparently, like, Michael Jackson wanted to, or they was good. Lined up to like do a cameo in that scene, like they were gonna like open up a door and like Michael Jackson would be there, because it's just like the weirdest, like, I mean, I still make, like, I feel like you can still make jokes about like Blade vampire clubs, like if you go to like a weird club, like you could be like, oh, it's like Blade, and like,
yeah,
it's fun,
like this is like Blade in here,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like people get
when
that
when they're just, the one woman is just getting her back cut open, yeah, while the guy's like just scalpeling through her back and she's just like smiling at the bar. It's like, it's disgusting.
Yeah, like there's a lot
of
weird.
Put there's a couple that puts razor blades in their mouth and then starts kissing. Like,
oh yeah, that's fucking.
Because you know, it's like, oh, blood is good to them because they're vampires. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's so weird.
Even
now,
I'm like wincing at that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's. What was I saying? I forgot. Sorry.
Vampire Club. House of Pain.
Bloody.
Michael Jackson. Everything's so weird. You can use it.
Oh,
as
yeah.
A
just that, like, the whole point is just like, it's the weirdest place with like the most extreme things going on. And like Michael Jackson, like being in one of the rooms, I think would have been a joke about that.
Yeah. He's like, help me. Let me out.
Or I don't know if he would have been a vampire or what.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But it would have been.
It would have been great if he turned around and had Thriller eyes.
I feel like it would have. People would. It would have been distracting. I'm almost glad it's not there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That apparently was almost in the
There's
movie.
A lot of fun action in that, because this is where we learn that the guns don't work on the Reavers.
Right. I mean, that. Yeah.
Reapers?
Also, that
Reapers or Reavers?
I'm not sure. Reapers are Firefly. We're doing a lot of.
Yeah,
we're doing
Reavers
a lot of,
are Firefly.
Reavers are Fire. Maybe these are Reapers.
These are Reapers.
We're doing a lot of Joss on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, that there's that kind of great movie cliche where I believe Lighthammer, the big dude, gets bitten, but like doesn't tell anyone he's been bitten.
That's such a good. That's like a horror movie cliche.
Totally, like someone hiding the zombie.
It's
bite.
Just only in my back. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like. I'm okay, and then like everyone goes and he like peeks at it, and it's gotten a little worse. But it's a little different here, because it's like the vampire is the one that's been bitten, so
right?
It's like, and then there's a great scene that also that's what really crystallized the aliens thing for me is there's a great scene where his, I guess, girlfriend, I don't remember her name, but she's part of the Blood Pack too, and she sees what's happening and she kills them both. You know, like, so they climb up and
she opens the sewer,
so they both get sunlight on them. And it reminded me, there's that scene. Definitely the best, like, tertiary character in Aliens is, like, that tough, like, she's, like, that tough woman who, like...
Vasquez.
Yeah. See, you know her name, and the fourth-billed character in Aliens.
Right.
And she, like, she heroically blows herself up to, like, stop the aliens, right?
Yeah.
And they're in a tunnel, like, they're in a small, closed...
Right,
condition.
She knows what she
so
has
that
to
scene
do.
Reminded
Come
me...
Come at me, motherfucker!
So the scene of her blowing up this dude in Blade 2 reminded me of Vasquez.
Here's my favorite trivia about that actress, Vasquez.
Yeah.
She is the foster mom in Terminator 2.
Oh, who gets
like... what do you mean? She's never cooking. Yeah, that's her. And then also she's the woman in Lethal Weapon 2 when they start killing the cops. And she dives off the diving board that gets exploded as she's doing a dive.
I don't remember Lethal Weapon 2 that well.
Oh, okay, well, you're missing it.
All I remember, I've seen Lethal Weapon 2, but all I remember is the toilet paper scene.
Right, right.
I actually think I saw it, maybe it was 2 or 3, but I saw it, it was 2. I saw like some of it recently on TV, it wasn't that recently, and there was a very weird scene, because that whole movie's about the South African diplomat is like the bad guy, so there's a lot of South Africa, and there's like a weird scene where... Danny Glover, like, causes a scene at the South African embassy because I think he says he wants to, like, go there, and like they're like, what? Because like they're
apartheid.
They're like, so it's like kind of played for laughs. There's apartheid, and that like Danny Glover wants. It was weird. So that's
upon rewatch of that movie too. There is some moments where Danny Glover is pissed about South Africa, which is a really cool thing.
Interesting.
Which is a really cool thing for a movie like that to take a swing at. You know?
Right, right.
Diplomatic immunity.
That I remember that so clearly. I probably saw that movie when I was like 13 or 14. Not since.
Back to Blade 2.
Okay, back to Blade 2. Yeah. Thank you. You're keeping me on track. Yeah.
We were just talking about House of Pain, which was fucking awesome. I wanted to say, like, here's my joke about Blade 2 that only makes sense if you have watched Blade 2 recently.
I love it.
In the House of Pain sequence is when we learn that guns don't work on the Reapers. Unfortunately, the characters in this movie never learn that. They still are using guns in the sewer sequence, and I guess it'll hurt them or slow them down at least. But then sometimes it does kill them.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't kill the main one. Maybe the others are weaker than the main one.
Yeah, I think that might be true. Like, the older those are, the more powerful they are. Let's talk about the fight sequence where they go under the sewers. Where this is like, they're like, it's almost sunlight.
They're hunting.
Yeah, they're hunting.
They're hunting, and
they have
the sewers.
A bunch of fucking light grenades.
Pretty cool. That's like a good Guillermo del Toro, like, they don't just explode with light. Like, you see a little gear turn. It, like, props itself up and opens a little before the light
comes out. It's like a Pokeball.
Yeah.
It's weird that the light, like, travels down a hallway and around corners. Like, it doesn't travel like actual light, which is interesting. It travels like fire, which makes it visually cool.
Right. They use, I guess, light is the one thing. I mean, this is the scene. It kind of starts to not make sense that they're tracking the blood pack with, like, it doesn't really make sense. And this is the scene where the vampire's scheme is laid clear, and they
they're gonna kill Whistler. The two, Chupo, which is a great name, Chupo and Reinhardt are gonna kill Whistler. Those are three insane names.
Yeah,
Chupo and Reinhardt are gonna kill Whistler.
Here's a good joke in Blade 2 is that they have a lawyer. The vampires have a lawyer.
Oh, great.
And the lawyer's like, and like
Blade goes, you're a human,
and he's like, lawyer, I fucked it up.
Yeah,
you're a human. The lawyer says, almost, I'm a lawyer. Like a clap. Like, that's a clean hit.
Dad joke.
It's a perfect joke.
Yeah, he has a great death, too.
Yeah, he does. He gets shot by Whistler.
From underneath.
Yeah, I like the idea that, like, humans in Blade, like, can be convinced to work for the vampires so that they might get turned by them. Like, I get that.
That makes sense.
It's like,
I think when you find out that Scud has flipped, he has that great line. It's like, I'd rather be a pet than cattle.
Yeah. You know what scene?
That's like betting on the vampires winning, which is not a bad idea necessarily.
A really cool scene in a horror movie that really stuck with me is in, I think it's called Land of the Dead, the fourth George Romero Dead movie that he made like 20 years after, let's say, not Dawn of the Dead. What's the third one?
Oh, I don't remember.
Anyway, it's the fourth one. It's like from the 2000s. Dennis Hopper's in it. John Leguizamo's in it.
I don't think I've seen it.
Anyway, John Leguizamo's like one of the main zombie hunters. And at the end, he's bitten. And one of his, in like the climactic scene or whatever, and one of his friends, like, you know, leaves him a gun. He's like, no, I want to see how the other side lives. And I like, that always stuck with me. Like, the idea that like someone would like, will it be like, you know what? Like, I'm down. Like,
well, I'll figure it
out. Let's see what's up. Like, I don't know. Like, that scene always stuck with me because, I don't know, it seemed reasonable. Like,
yeah, that's completely fair.
Like, I don't know that I'd make that decision, but like, it just seemed interesting. And like, I kind
of
get that. And
no, I would have killed myself hours ago in any of these situations.
Right. But in Blade 2, I don't know. I think that's like an interesting thing. We were talking, I think, when we were talking about Blade 1, just about how like there's interesting bits of world building. Like, you don't really have to pay attention to on the fringes of the movie.
Right. I didn't fully follow in Blade 2, even upon the 15th viewing, this as I watched it last night and this morning. There, the shit with like he's actually the son, like give him this ring, like there's like 12 different turns, like the Reaper who we think is the bad guy is the son of the Reaper who's the actual bad guy.
Yeah,
the father is working with the Middle Eastern chick who is like Blade's
love interest,
fake love interest, like asexual love interest.
Yeah, Blade doesn't have time for love. You know, like he would if he could, but he just can't.
Daywalker.
Yeah,
and then the father. So that's her brother, but he they want to do something. They don't want to deal with him. They don't want him to be part of it.
It's also revealed that they have designed him. I think they presented it that, like, it organically evolved, but it turns out it's, like, they made it, and it, like, they were trying to design something, and this was a mistake on the way. Like, they were trying to design more stronger vampires or whatever.
Right.
I am unclear on exactly... So Jared, the lead Reaver, gives Whistler a ring, which Whistler gives to Blade, which Blade reveals at a climactic moment, which... Whistler reveals it, which shows the Nyssa, the one of the Blood Pack, that her father, the head vampire, has somehow betrayed her. I'm unclear. I guess because he had, I guess it's like the family ring, and I guess because he had one, you don't get one unless you're family.
Yeah, right.
No, that is, no one sets that up. No one's like, oh yeah, the ring, you got to be part of his family to get a ring.
Right. You kind
of
just know,
that line is missing from the movie, I guess.
Right.
But I think that's what's going on there.
Sorry to jump back, but we were talking about other action sequences. I want to just talk about the sword fight between Blade, Nyssa, and the guy who has, like, his name is like Ashim. He has, like,
When they're still in the suits.
Yeah, when they're
that's
in those,
a cool,
like,
scene. It's CG, I think.
It
like
is,
a lot of it is CG.
Because when they go to the light wall, it's very CG.
So that's a cool looking scene. They're fighting in front of, like, this UV light wall, so like you kind of just see their silhouettes fighting.
But doesn't those bodysuits with the red contacts kind of like precursors to the Hellboy character, the one who's blue?
Oh, Abe Sapien.
Yeah.
I don't know if Abe looked like that in the comic books too. Gamera was a huge, like, Hellboy's like a passion, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't just like get hired to do that. He was like,
right. It just feels like, it looks like Guillermo del Toro for those guys to be in skin suits with like little eyes that are adjusting to the light.
That's
and stuff
an interesting
like that.
Scene because that's like a C. That's one of the first times I remember seeing like humans as CG when they're not like monsters or anything. Like Blade just is CG in that movie, almost just for like fancy camera work purposes.
It's almost it's like reminiscent of like Mortal Kombat. They're like literally, or like they're literally side scrolling with lights in the background. And they're doing, like, jump, flip, kick. Oh, now I'm jump, flip, kick. You know, like, they're doing, like, moves like that.
Blade 3, it was such a disappointment. It's one of the worst... It's one of the most disappointing movies I've ever seen. Are you interested in, like, another Blade movie? Because I feel like every few years, Wesley Snipes is like, yeah, we're trying to bring it back.
I would be pumped for one more Blade.
I feel like Wesley Snipes' vision is, like, at the end of Avengers 3, like, after they kill Thanos, like, Captain America's like... You know, like,
now we gotta fight, like, vampires.
Captain America, like, kills Thanos, and then Captain America, like, turns around, and Thanos gets up, and then, like, a bullet hits him, and they're like, what happened? They turn around, and they see Blade, and he's like, you motherfuckers think you know what's going on? Your world is just a candy shell around the real world. Then it, like, cuts to credits, you know? Like,
and that would be awesome if the Marvel Universe just rolled itself back into fucking Blade.
I think... It's. I mean,
there's room for a Blade movie for sure.
Would you get Wesley? Is it still Wesley Snipes?
It has to be.
I don't know. They did a Blade TV show. Do you remember that? There was a Blade.
Well, I was
TV
gonna
show.
Say like Blade would make sense for Netflix.
Yeah,
in the Marvel
totally.
World.
Yeah, it would be a good fit for like their like street level.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
It's surprising they haven't tried to bring it back because like because of these movies, he has more name recognition than. Guardian. I mean, now not, but 5 years ago, he had more recognition than Guardians or Ant-Man or like a lot of the characters they've developed instead. Maybe the rights are still with New Line or something like that.
It's got to be something like that. Yeah,
I don't know. And it's interesting, like, people were really blown away, I think, when Guardians and Ant-Man were like big hits because these are not Thor and Iron Man. Like, these are not as well-known characters.
I think they realize it doesn't matter as much because the movies, because Guardians 2 was so much fun.
But maybe they should have learned that earlier, because Blade was a big hit, and like Blade had no like name.
No one knew who Blade was before.
Even compared to like Spawn, you know, like which I think was probably...
Spawn was more popular than Blade, I feel
like. Totally. Yeah, totally. Like Spawn was
as a comic,
Spawn was also like new and hot. Like Blade was like, I don't know, some weird like Spider-Man C-lister from the
70s,
you know?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit on my episode, but on Blade 1. But it's funny, like, it's crazy that it took 20 years to come back to, like, a black lead superhero.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit, and neither of us really know how to engage with it, but Blade's blackness is a little more, like, Ron Perlman says something racist to him in this one, and I don't know, like, I feel like we both decided it was an inextricable piece of the character that we couldn't exactly decide why or how or
but
what
that
meant.
It's just interesting that, like, you know, they'll say, like, the excuse Hollywood might use is that, like, black actors can't open huge movies, but, like... Blade 1 and 2 were huge comic book movies when they came out.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, like, looking back at Wesley Snipes' career, there's, like, definitely a point where he decided, I guess he was always into martial arts, as I learned morning, right? Like, he was, like, since a young kid, he's taken martial arts very seriously. If you look at his old movie, like, he didn't start as an action hero. Like, he was, like, New Jack City and, like, White Men Can't Jump. Like, he was fun. White Men Can't Jump, he's hilarious, you know? Like,
he's very fun. He's got a great Twitter presence now.
Oh, really?
He's very funny on Twitter. He's attacking people constantly. Like,
oh! Keep going.
No, yeah. He's just super funny on Twitter. Everyone, he responds to people. He's always, like, roasting, retweeting. He retweets with, like, the Black Power fist for, like, anytime someone says, like, all these motherfuckers talking about Black Panther, but we should be talking about Blade. You know,
that's funny.
He retweets it with the Black Fist.
I remember, so in the last episode, we were talking about how many great Wesley Snipes movies he's been in. There was a Wesley Snipes retrospective at a local theater, and we listed all the great Wesley Snipes movies, but one we left out, maybe the best one with the best performance, is fucking Demolition Man.
Oh, shit, right.
We're naming great Wesley Snipes movies.
Stupid movie.
Like, we had that conversation like an hour and a half ago on another podcast, but it's so important to me that we mentioned Demolition Man and Wesley Snipes' performance in it. I had to bring it up now.
He's so fucking good in Demolition
Man. Yeah, and you know, Pat...
But it wouldn't fit in the argument we were making in the first one, because we were saying on the Blade 1 episode, we were saying how he's been in a bunch of good movies.
Demolition Man's a good movie.
No, it's not. He's good in Demolition Man.
I've seen Demolition Man pretty recently. Demolition Man has, like... I mean, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's very funny. It's Demolition Man's a pretty funny movie. It's very well... I feel like it's well remembered.
Yeah, fucking Dennis Leary playing himself.
There's a cool scene...
He, like, does a five-minute chunk from his own stand-up in that movie.
Right. Yeah. I forgot about that part.
Rat burgers.
There's a cool scene in that movie where they go to dinner at Taco Bell, which is, like, it's a joke that it's a fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
But they have... There's, like, definitely, like, one sci-fi scene in that movie where they talk about, like... Like they're keeping people down, and like should people have freedom, and like it gets like super sci-fi in that one scene, and that's all I need is one scene where people discuss like the implications for humanity with technology,
and
I'm on board.
Is just goofy and ridiculous. Three seashells.
I mean,
and shit
I think
like
it's
that.
A really fun. I'll defend Demolition Man. I think it's.
I'll defend Wesley Snipes' performance in that for
something
sure.
Something Pat Castles pointed out to me when he watched Demolition Man recently was that. Wesley Snipes is going absolutely bananas in that movie, and he is never talking to anyone. He's like, he's delivering a soliloquy like the entire film, like,
right? Because he has no henchmen,
right? Like he's in the future, so he doesn't have any friends. Like he goes to like the museum, and he's like, oh yeah, this is my kind of stuff. And there's like no one around at all, and he's like,
just need him to talk because he's fucking charming as hell.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes, I think, decided to style himself as an action hero at some point. It worked. Yeah. Demolition Man, Passenger 57, these movies.
Terminal Velocity.
Well, I don't know.
That's the skydiving movie with him and Charlie Sheen.
Man, isn't that driving movie?
Drop Zone.
Yeah. Terminal Velocity, I think, is Charlie Sheen and a car. I think Terminal Velocity has a car going out of an airplane.
I think Terminal Velocity is the Charlie Sheen skydiving movie.
Yeah.
And Drop Zone is the Wesley Snipes.
I've never seen either of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen both of them, but maybe I'm confusing both of them also.
So Wesley Snipes did become an action hero, and I think like Blade's like is Blade Wesley Snipes' signature character? I kind of think he is, right?
Yeah, it's like it's Blade, it's Nino, or it's Nino Brown,
which is the New Jack City.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like. Blade is so many more people have seen Blade.
Right.
You know,
so
it's
Blade,
so much more
Blade
popular.
Blade crosses like everyone's.
Yeah, him. Like I feel like when Wesley Snipes dies many years from now, an old man having had a long illustrious career, he Blade is like in the first line of the obituary.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, you're right. What were some of the other actions after the sewer action sequence? We have Blade has to go in and he gets kidnapped. At the end of it, he gets taken because, again, they're going to use the Daywalker blood to really finalize the...
Right.
Sort of similar to the first one.
Right.
And then he gets taken in there, and then they're like, so-and-so will never come here, Jared or whatever, and he's like, oh, he knows where we are.
I like the bad guy's name is Jared.
He's coming straight from his bar mitzvah.
to me, the biggest oversight for like a character in the movie, like why are they doing that sort of thing in the movie, is when Ron Perlman... shoots Blade falls in a giant bucket of a pool of sci-fi blood.
Oh, yeah.
And Ron Perlman's like, cool, I'm done here. And just walks away. It's like the blood, like it is, I drop them in a giant pool of the thing that regenerates them.
Yeah.
And I'll just turn around without
right.
looking.
Right. But that's a great, that whole sequence I love so much.
Yeah, that is pretty, like, blood is gross.
Blood is gross, and they do a good job of making it gross in these movies.
It's a little, like, waterier in that scene than I think
right,
it is in
which,
real life.
Because it's, like, bubbling.
Yeah.
Which makes it, like, less disgusting.
But it's, oh, you know what's funny? Again, just, like, a little bit of world building that, like, no one ever really talks about is in the very beginning when he's in Russia. Before he breaks in, they show those guys doing like blood cocaine.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just like cool. Like they have like
and they're mixing blood in their vodka drink because they're
right.
Russian. Yeah,
and it's just like there's different. And I think that the reason that came to mind is just like that blood tank's like it's a giant blood tank. It's like where are they getting this from? Like what are they doing with
right,
it?
Well,
like,
you also kind of get a little touch of world building in that cold open when the Reaver first goes in there.
Right, and it's like
place that donates. You can donate as many pints of blood as you want. It's all cash.
And they're like, do you have any next of kin?
Right,
no one
right.
will miss you. And it's like, you can see that what they do is like find vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And you see them and, you know, bleed them to death or whatever.
Right, exactly. And to feed.
And yeah, I guess that's what makes Blade, that's one of the things that makes these movies like really fun and interesting for me is like that Blade is cool and the action is cool and like it's fun and there's all, and the story is easy to get and fun. But like, there's a world, like, it feels like a lived-in world with, like, rules and, like,
right,
you can make
yeah.
a movie, like, you can make a movie in the Blade universe without Blade, about, like, other vampires.
Right,
still
yeah, and you kind of get the rules. Let's talk about the final fight between Blade and Reaver, because
yeah.
there's a couple of, that fight is insane.
Yeah, that's got a lot of the pro wrestling stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, leaping 50 feet into the air with a backflip to try to land on
I noticed
other.
There's a lot of, like, a lot of depth. And, you know, it's just a cool-looking movie. Like, in that shot with the elbow drop is cool because, like, Blade's in the foreground and
yeah.
you see the Reaver, like, in the background, like, run up the walls and then, like,
yeah.
run off the frame and then come down in the
yeah.
foreground. And that happens, again, in the, of course, who can forget the Whistler throwing his sunglasses scene to Blade.
Oh, so great.
Like, Whistler's in the back. Like, you see Whistler in
He's
the
like,
background.
Hey, boy. Turns around, he just fucking, or son, maybe he doesn't say boy, that's like kind of racist.
I think he says son.
Yeah.
Around.
And he fucking fires the sunglasses at him, like frisbee style, like tomahawk toss.
He has a name for him, and it's funny when, like, it's funny how they don't, it's like obviously a father-son thing, but
yeah.
like in the first one, when Whistler's dying, like he doesn't say I love you, he's like, now get out of here, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Like that's how they say they love each other,
right.
you know?
And also, Scud is calling him B the whole time, which
yeah.
is cool. He's like, yo, B, this is gonna work. This,
yeah, he's yeah. definitely stoned, come on.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Right, he's like brainstorming ideas for, that's his character.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, I put the Nas in there. Yeah, he's a stoner. He's like,
you know what's a funny joke? A good joke is when Norman Reedus is revealed as the bad, as a familiar, as working with them.
Great.
And then Blade's like, it's very satisfying when Blade's like, I've been on to you and it's not a bomb. And then he blows him up. That's
right.
really satisfying. But then Whistler gets a great joke in, which is, I was just starting to like that guy.
Yeah.
it's a funny joke because like, yeah. they don't like each other at first. Cause,
right.
like,
and they start
he's
to
kind of replaced
together.
Him. And they do start to get along. And
right.
like Whistler is blindsided by the turn. And like,
and that's a great explosion too. Like the
yeah.
blood lands on Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
Like everyone is coated with that blood.
And I just like, I like that Whistler didn't get it. You know, that he pulled one over on Whistler is like funny, and it like humanizes him a little, you know, and like
in the just to jump back, talking about familiars and these humans that work with the vampires, in that Russia sequence, the bad guys that he fights are vampires, or dudes in sunglasses and helmets, or Asian dudes with ponytails,
right?
And there's like 20 of each, which is just such a funny like.
It's probably the same like. Six dudes like
oh
over
yeah
and, over
and
again.
They're probably the guys in the fucking helmets that
yeah,
come
yeah.
out with the electric batons
yeah
and
I
shit.
Thought that was weird at the end with the electric batons, like why are they wearing helmets and stuff, like I don't know,
yeah
they
don't
know
know
Blade they know
but
Blade
it makes it look cool,
it does make it look cool, and it's probably so they can recycle the same people over
right.
and over again,
and so like it could be stuntmen and could be the same stuntmen over and over again and
yeah
like that. And the batons I guess is because they needed them alive, which is like
right that's
conceit.
Right they did
yeah.
need them alive
yeah.
That's also, I feel like that's a big movie cliche is like, we need him alive.
Right,
so, like,
that there's no way to.
So you don't just like shoot him in the
justifies
head.
Justifies why
the movie.
Yeah, the second he's knocked out, they don't just walk over and hit him fucking 12 bullets in the dome.
You know, in the first one, I think we talked about, I remember how I saw Blade 1 the first time, like with a friend at this film. And I actually remember the first time I saw Blade 2. And I actually remember it came out the weekend of the Oscars. And I like went and saw this like the night the Oscars were on. I don't really watch award shows. I went and saw Blade. And it obviously should have won all the Oscars the following year. But I distinctly remember walking out and being like, that was a fucking... Like, I remember, like, during the movie, and I remember feeling this way during Pacific Rim 2, just being like, I fucking love this movie, you know?
Blade 2 had that feeling where, because I knew I was going to like it, because I like... Well, I was pumped to like it, because I liked Blade 1. And then Blade 2 was just even more of all the shit I liked about it. More sword stuff, more fucking weapons, more cool guns. Ron Perlman's... pistols that are also knives is such a fucking cool thing.
In terms of sequels that like turn up the original without kind of losing what made the original special,
yeah.
I wonder if it's one of the best sequels. I mean, like, I wouldn't say it's as good a movie as Godfather 2, but just in terms of like,
I think T2 is like the best sequel.
Yeah, T2 is,
but it's not the same movie as T1.
Right, and Alien and Aliens would be a similar thing.
Right,
T2 and T1 are fairly similar, closer than Alien and Aliens,
right?
I would
but they're
say.
Just like completely different levels of movies.
But I guess in terms of movies that are not in any way different, where two is like a little bit of a feels a lot like the first one. Let's say, like, I'm struggling to think of one where the second one like improved as much as the first one while staying in the same lane. You know,
right, yeah. It's like John Wick 2 was very good, but it didn't like blow John Wick 1 out of the way. Yeah.
I thought it was not even close. I liked John Wick 2, but like it was not as good as John Wick 1.
No,
and
it wasn't.
Much less better. Like, I love Captain America 2, but like I think it's basically completely different than Captain America 1.
Captain America 1 I saw with you.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Captain America, I love Winter Soldier. That's like
that might be my favorite Marvel movie. But that's like not a sequel in the same way Blade 1 to Blade 2 was.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really struggling. Oh, Hellboy 2. That's the other one. Hellboy 2. Yeah, it's gotta be Del Toro.
Yeah.
I wonder what his next movie is. He's always...
Is he doing Pacific Rim 2 though?
There is a Pacific Rim 2, and I'm sure he's producing it and maybe even has a writing credit on it, but I don't think he's directing it.
Oh.
He is hard to keep up with, especially because he's obviously one of my favorite directors if you haven't picked up on that yet, but he's always doing so many things. Like, he's always got so many projects that are maybe going to happen that he's very difficult to keep up with what he's actually doing. I think they're making another Hellboy, but it's not going to be Ron... It's like a reboot, not Ron Perlman Hellboy.
Interesting.
Which is...
Oh, I think I saw that because people were not happy that it wasn't...
Yeah, I mean, I think until recently, the hope was alive that there might one day be another Ron Perlman Hellboy movie, but I guess that ship has sailed, which is too bad.
Because they want to maybe make 10 more.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, I'd be sad to... That's such a great role, and I'd
be
sad...
That's, like, iconic for Ron Perlman to be Hellboy.
Well, yeah.
Hellboy sort of looks like Ron Perlman the way Ron Perlman looks like Hellboy.
Yeah, but Ron Perlman, I think if people know him now, it's from Sons of Anarchy, you know? Like, that, I think, really put him on the map for a lot of people. I mean, especially because in Hellboy, he's under such heavy makeup, you know?
Yeah,
it's hard to really see him.
I watched all of Sons of Anarchy.
Me too. I talk about it a lot on this podcast. I don't know why it keeps coming up.
That's so funny.
I
didn't even like it after the fourth season.
I didn't like it after the second season. It's probably the worst show I stuck with. Like,
yeah, but there's some... Cause,
Donal Logue's on that show.
Right! He pops up at the end, yeah. As like a heroin-addicted internal affair. Like,
right.
What about that show? Because I know so many people who have good taste in TV
and
movies.
And stuck with it.
Who stuck with it. And once they went to Ireland, it was complete garbage.
That's the third season.
Yeah.
The second season was... Yeah, why did people stick with it even though it's bad? Is that your question?
Because I watched four more seasons after season three.
I don't know. There were moments of greatness where like it felt like it was going to be good again. Like, there were some cool parts. Oh, really great cast. I mean, Ron Perlman's great.
Yeah,
like,
the cast is great. Katie
Charlie
Siegel.
Hunnam's great, but like... Also, all the surrounding people. Like, I saw Tig in something recently, and I was like, fuck yeah, Tig rules. And like,
oh shit, wait, hold on. Cause I just saw Tig in something too.
It was,
and I said,
was it Guardians? It's Guardians. He's in Guardians too. He's still on the Stallone planet.
He's also in, he's got a small part in, No,
that wasn't Tig. This is the Irish dude.
You're thinking of Chibs.
Chibs, yeah.
Yes, and that's what it was. And Chibs is also in Braveheart. And I just recently rewatched Braveheart, and I was like, Tiff, that's Chibs.
Tig is in Battlefield Earth.
Yes, Tig hasn't had that great of a...
But anyway, it's like, when the cast is really good, and like, even when the show was, it didn't feel like... It made the show watchable,
it was,
I guess.
And it was always 40 minutes,
like,
you know what I mean?
If
you
watch not always 40 minutes. Like,
right, because
then
it eventually started being like an hour and 10.
I think it was so popular, they started letting Kurt Suter just like do whatever
he
wanted.
Do like hour and a half episodes with commercials.
All right, so...
Back to Blade 2.
But Ron Perlman, if anything makes that show watchable, it's Ron Perlman and the cast, and I think that's part of what makes Blade 2 so great too.
Right, yeah, because Ron Perlman's fucking awesome in this, and it's really like he has like a lot of moments where you're like, oh, he's an asshole, but Ron Perlman's believable that he's the type of guy that could be an asshole and then be your friend, but then he's revealed to not be a friend at the end.
Is there any actor on the scene today who could play Blade, or maybe a director who could take it over? Like, I wonder if there's like a cool new director who I'd like to see do it.
Ooh, yeah, it would kind
of maybe like Ty West or like one of the new like horror directors would be cool. Ty West is like a little mumblecore-y, so yeah. I don't know if he'd do like a big kung fu scene, but it'd be cool to see one of these new cool horror directors.
Or like the guys who did The Guest, Wingard, Adam Wingard.
The Guest, yeah,
and
yeah.
And Your Next were there too.
Oh, I loved Your Next. What was after that? I liked The Next one too.
The Guest.
Didn't they do something after that?
Did they do
Maybe I just saw Your Next after I saw The Guest.
Yeah, they're both fucking great movies.
Yeah, I like.
They might have done one more. I'm trying.
I think
to
they did something else that I liked even more than those other two.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So maybe one of those guys would be cool. Like,
yeah,
a
someone who could do action well too. I mean, like, what if the dudes who do John Wick did Blade? It'd be sick.
I think your Netflix idea is a good one. Like, I could definitely see that working. Like, Netflix has competent martial arts, like street level. Like, yeah. a car would be a different vibe than the other ones, you know?
Right, right, right. And then you can have some, like, Daredevil helps you against some vampires. And
I also want to see, like, just the vampire world. Like, I want to spin off just about, like, vampire corporate world and,
right?
like,
yeah,
like
that's
all
interesting.
Them. Like,
yeah.
there could be cool, like, intrigue
like
there.
House of Cards in, like, a vampire world.
Right, right. Like, I think that's a really rich thing.
Did you watch True Blood?
No, I didn't like True Blood. I watched the first episode or two, and I was like, this feels like erotic fan fiction for another better show.
True Blood was like another show that I dug, watched two seasons of, started to dislike, and then watched five more.
Did you ever see Daybreakers? I think we mentioned in the last one.
No, I didn't. Is that the Ethan Hawke movie?
Yeah, Ethan Hawke and Sam Neill, actually.
Oh,
is
I
a
love
vampire.
Sam Neill.
Did you see that New Zealand movie he's in?
Hunt
People?
For the Wilder People? Yeah, he's great.
He's so good in that. So this is a movie, it's almost like a what if for Blade, where like the corporate vampires actually won and the world has been taken over by vampires. And it's like an okay movie, but it's got a lot of the stuff we've been talking about for the last 2 hours, like cool world building stuff where like, you see the way the vampires have, like, adjusted to the world to be their...
Like, the hours have been flipped. Yeah. Like, and office at night and sleep there.
I think the inciting incident is that they're running out of blood. Like, they're running out of human blood. Like, they've exhausted all the human blood resources, and they're trying to figure out something new, and that makes... You know, that sets the movie off.
That's the conceit of True Blood, too. Because True Blood is the artificial blood that they make
right.
that staves off the cravings.
So in this movie, Sam Neill's like the evil vampire CEO or president who like is, you know, trying... I forget what he's doing to try to make it work. But it's very Blade-like in its kind of corporate intrigue plus like horror, which I think is like cool. a really fun space to play in. Blade 1 and 2, folks. I don't know if we haven't convinced you to watch them yet. I'm sorry for listening for the past 2 hours.
Yeah, I know.
But I think they're worth going back to. Like, Blade 1's almost 20 years old, which makes it sound like a really old movie, but
it
totally
really
stands
holds
up.
Over. It's paced so well.
And if you like comic movies and you've never seen them, I think you really should go back. And it's, like, not going to be, like, doing homework. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, you got to watch the Richard Donner Superman. Look, that's a great movie. I love the Christopher Reeve Superman, but, like, right. I wouldn't be telling you, like, you're like it can feel like homework a
Blade
little bit.
Blade 2 is way more fun to watch than Superman.
Yeah, even though Superman's probably maybe a better movie or something. Yeah. Like
Blade 2 is, like, Civil War was so fun to watch, but I want to, now that I've just watched Blade 2, I'm curious to watch Civil War and just see how bloated and, like,
right. Well, it's a different thing.
Candy, it feels
like the Blade movies are so streamlined that they're, like, kind of a different thing. And it's kind of nice to go back to, like, not have, like, all that world building in it.
I love that it's R-rated. I loved Logan for that reason.
Yeah. All right. We've reached the section of the show where we plug things. John, tell us about your podcast. I think we did a little bit of it earlier.
Check out my podcast called High and Mighty every Thursday. It's very similar. If you like the Jeff Rubin show, you'll like High and Mighty.
Who's coming up on the show? You just told me about one as I was coming in, and I was like, I want to listen to that.
Oh, recently, that would have been, I did an episode about Wilderness with Ross Campbell, who's a very funny comic and a giant. And he used to be an outdoors guide, so it was a lot of fun.
Do you know Russ? And you were like, oh, it'd be fun to talk about Russ about the Wilderness. Or are you into the Wilderness?
I started, like, I'm into it, but I'm just getting around to, like, getting into it more and more. Because my Tiff won't camp or do anything like that because she's so afraid.
But you live in Los Angeles, so you can drive somewhere for the day.
Right,
know?
And I've been doing stuff like that more and more where it's like, even like, and when we were in New Zealand, we did a couple of hikes to these waterfalls and shit that I was just like, oh, I need to pursue stuff like
that. Yeah, that's what happened to me is I was overseas and I saw cool nature and I was like, oh, nature's cool. And like,
yeah, and then it's like, oh shit, we have that in the US.
Yeah, it really woke it up for me. So I will definitely be listening to that as I always listen to the show. John, what a pleasure to have you back on.
Dude, thanks for having me, man.
And Wesley Snipes, thank you.
Wesley Snipes, thank you for everything. You'll be tagged in a tweet about these two episodes for sure. Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you again, John.
Later.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.